before we start the show, just a warning. For the second week in a row, we've had some audio issues. Last time it was Yvonne on a bad cell connection from a hotel room somewhere. This time, Yvonne was actually doing the show from the car. So for part of the show, we had some car noises kind of stuff. So we did our best. It's not that bad, but I just wanted to warn you anyway. Anyway, here's the show. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, April 14th, 2016. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello, everybody.
And what's that loud background noise you have behind you today, Yvonne?
Well, it's not going to be so loud right now because from my car, because apparently there's a big traffic jam.
So anyway, Yvonne is calling us from his car because it just worked out that way.
I am calling from my car because I had a business meeting and I forgot to tell Sam I had a business meeting just because I had a lot of stuff going on. I've been I've been running around like a headless chicken. I don't know. I'm exhausted. Let me just put it that way.
Speaking of headless chickens, for any of you who have not read about Mike the Headless Chicken, you should go look him up.
Yes, that'd be interesting.
Just for those of you who don't know, Mike the Headless Chicken lived from April 1945 to March 1947, lived 18 months after his head was cut off.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, look it up. It's fun. Well, not for Mike.
Well, not for Mike, but, it's just a fun fact. But anyway.
So anyway, our show is going to be mostly election stuff this time. There are just a handful of small other things to talk about. But, it's election season. What can I say? All of you guys know, in the absence of major news events, basically from now until the end of the year, at least through November, it's going to be election.
And then after the election, we're going to be scrambling for topics, and then we'll figure something else to talk about.
Well, we'll have a couple months of, new president.
Right.
And then suddenly, like next February or something, it'll be like, what's going on?
The one thing is that we're going to miss, that I will miss personally.
Yes.
Is the deep thought comments that you keep getting on your post for electiongraphs.com on Facebook. It is just a shining light of just brilliance and accolades, it's just brilliant.
Well, and when we get to that section, I was actually going to bring up some of those type of things, and not to read out specific people's comments, but just in terms of how Trump people are thinking right now.
I thought, my thought this week, I thought about doing something because, I was like looking at the comments, I'm just chuckling. And I wanted to just post a reply that just said, fucking lying assholes, right? That's it. That's all I wanted to say. Because you see, the great thing about,
you can interpret that in many ways.
Exactly. And I was just thinking about that, so they could think I'm in a, I'm saying you're that or the, anybody, it could just work in every direction. I was just thinking I'm thinking about someday that's gonna be my reply. Just boom, that's it. Let that fester for a while, see what happens.
And my wife both like trolling these Trump people. Because they're also earnest.
But, I guess if I take the statistics based on what we're finding there, I guess that 99% of the population is for Trump.
Oh, based on the comments on my site. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
They're certainly very vocal, and they're very out there.
They're very noisy, yes. They're not good spellers, as far as I can tell, either. They have a problem. They have a consistent problem. I keep seeing that almost everywhere I go, where they collect like Trump supporter opinions. Apparently, not very, very good spellers.
Yeah, yeah. So before we dive into the election
like
stuff.
I saw today one which was like Israel, which was, you know, yes. Hello?
Well, you know, that's a hard word. Are you still there? Have I lost Yvonne?
I am. I hear you right now. Okay. No, I'm right here.
Okay. Yay.
Yes.
So I was just going to say, before we take a break and go straight into the election stuff, why don't we just blow out all the rest of the stuff first, a bunch of little small things.
Yes. We have a few things, yep.
So one that you were particularly interested in when I mentioned it was, for the first time in 97 years, the U.S. Postal Service is dropping the prices on stamps. Now, when I heard this, my natural thought was, this is a supply and demand thing, and no one wants to send mail anymore, so they're lowering the price.
My thought was, okay, he thought that, and I was like, that doesn't make sense. And then I thought, well, fuel has gone down a lot, mm-hmm. is my thinking, you know, oil and fuel. So I'm guessing, well, maybe it's just, you know, fuel costs are a lower percentage of the cost. They could bring the cost down.
I could see that.
But apparently,
both of us were wrong. So
flat out wrong.
The price reduction. So just to get the background, on Sunday, the price of stamps is going to drop, and that's regular first class stamps, postcard stamps, international mail stamps. They're all dropping a few cents, and apparently the reason is that there was a special program enacted that had allowed the post office to raise stamp prices in order to make up for lost revenue after mail volume declined as a response to the Great Recession. But the regulators apparently capped the amount of money the Postal Service could recoup in that way to $4.6 billion, and they expect to reach that number on Sunday.
Which is just absolutely retarded. So basically, it's not that we're not going to be paying for it. It's just that the users are not going to be charged for it. So it's going to go through the general deficit. It's ridiculous. I mean, what a retarded thing.
This doesn't say they've recouped the loss has recovered. I don't think mail volume has recovered. Has it? I don't know. But my impression was that mail volume, at least non-junk mail volume, had been declining for years now. And with no expectation of recovery, because nobody sends fucking letters anymore. An increasing number of people every year get things like bills electronically. And so what's left? I mean, so of course they've got less, and, you know, and for packages and such, they've got stiff competition from a variety of other vendors. So this whole first class mail thing is like, of course that's a declining market. And so
I will say that I am the curmudgeon that, you know, being that we are curmudgeon's corner.
Yeah.
I am the curmudgeon that for bills, I want them to still send me a bill over to mail.
Now, I stuck with that for a long time, but I've finally been giving up.
I have not been. If I don't do that, it happens that then occasionally a bill will slip by. Okay, so I'll do that for a bill.
The house is on fire.
However,
the house is not on fire. It is not urgent. The house is not on fire.
Well, me and Mom, we're making dinner. Then suddenly, the oven got too hot, and then it turned into fire.
Oh, okay. But Mommy's already put it out, right?
Nope, she can't.
As he laughs at me and leaves. Bye.
Right. Okay. So the thing is that I've gotten rid of, like, statements, okay?
Right.
So like a bank statement, like, whatever.
But you want your bills.
Online. But I want a bill, because the bill I need to pay by a certain time, okay? So informational, I don't want you to send me.
See, now most of those at this point...
I want you to send it to me, because the reason I want the actionable one to be sent is because usually over email, it gets cluttered with so much other shit.
Now that's true, and honestly, we have missed a few bills because of that. But most of our bills, we also have set up to auto pay at this point.
But there are certain bills that you can't. You know, I mean, there's just some things. Like I get medical bills all the time from like different providers. And I'm like, you know, you can't set those to auto pay. There's a lot of stuff that I do have set, like the mortgage and stuff like that and whatever. I set that. But, you know, sometimes there are just certain bills or certain things you just can't. And I'm like, I would rather just get a fucking, because email is just such a complicated thing. And then stuff winds up on junk. And as the police vehicles go past me because I am stuck in a traffic because of a massive accident, I just listen. If I owe money, send me a bill. I'll get that bill. I have it on a folder that I have in my house. Do bills, it gets paid. Well.
So. Yeah, see, we're awful with paper mail. Like, we only even go to the mailbox to check it maybe once every couple of weeks. You know?
The worst thing is that I get a lot of people still sending me paper checks.
Yeah.
My health insurance company for out of network claims will not pay anything unless it's by paper check. I tried to get them to direct deposit and they said no. They don't do that.
No, I understand that. But the point is not that there is no need for this anymore. It's just that it's dramatically declining.
Oh, it's declining. Yeah, but it's not out.
But so, it's not out. It's not zero, but it's going down, 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 down. Every year is less than the year before. The number of things that people continue to use it for are just diminishing. And so, but that's not why. That's not why the price is going down.
Yeah, it's not why. It's just stupidity. Because we're paying for it, you know? We're going to pay for it. Either we're going to put it in the deficit or whatever the hell, but we're paying for the damn thing. You know? So, anyway.
There you go. Okay. Other things on my little list before we move on to election stuff. Facebook's announcing some sort of launch of a chatbot store of some sort. Did you follow this at all?
I read very little of it.
I read very little of it, too, but you'd think, we just talked last week or whatever about Microsoft Tay. Is this the right timing for a chatbot store?
I don't know. I just don't know if we're ready for that yet to a certain extent. So,
well, and what
I don't know.
What this is, though, is it's like, it's things like setting up a chat box for your pizza delivery. So instead of using the app to order a pizza, you go on Facebook Messenger and you talk to Domino's and you tell them the pizza you want and you get a pizza. Things like
that. Right.
And, okay, I can see that. I mean, there are all kinds of other potential uses, too. But, you know, I'm not convinced yet. Like, it seems like a little too cutesy, and it seems like it's actually less functionality than you would have with an app. And it's just forcing it into that texting format.
I know, which is why I don't know how much makes the sense it makes me from what I read at the top level.
I'm just laughing really on because every once in a while your signal breaks into chirping noises.
I guess this is the future. I don't know. Oh, that's really good. Well, I don't know if it's. I know it's the future, but I'm not sure we're ready for that future yet.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, like. Well, even then, like, it's the replacement. Like, let's say you had the perfect chatbot and it can simulate a human and you can have your little conversation with it and you can replace your customer service reps with it. Okay. It's still like, it's that narrow slice that you replace. It's not really necessarily an advantage for the consumer. I can see why you as a business would say, you know, hey, I can just get this bot instead of hiring, you know, 1,000 customer service reps to do 24/7 coverage across the, you know, for whatever it is, I'll just have this bot. I can see the advantage for the company. I'm not really seeing the advantage for me as a consumer. Because it's,
right,
it's,
we're not getting anything out of it. It's not going to be any better.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like,
as a
right,
matter of fact, it's very probably it's going to be worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like right now when people get frustrated about going through the damn menus before they can get to a human, and they just want to
exactly. And you're like, fucking operator, agent, something. You know, yeah.
Exactly. And I could see this kind of thing being the same thing. Now, I mean, and in other things where it is sort of more consumer focused, like, you know, they're like, you can do the chatbot to tell you the weather or whatever. How is that better than my weather app?
I don't get that. I just don't get that. Yeah.
Or whatever. You know, I don't know. I'm not seeing it yet. I'm happy to be wrong if it turns out that in 5 years we're all, like, talking to our bots all the time. But, you know, I don't know.
I just turned off the other day, Hey Siri, because I'm like, I think I launched it by accident. And I was like, screw this. I'm not doing that again.
Oh, really? Yeah, see, I like Hey Siri.
I just shut it off. I shut it off the other day.
And I think
I'll use Siri a lot. Okay, don't get me wrong.
But you want to push the button.
Yeah, I want to push the button.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I'll use Hey Siri, like, in the car and in other, even without the car. And my son Alex knows how to use it too. So he's like, Hey Siri, blah blah blah, on a number of occasions to do whatever, to play a song or to do, you know, whatever. And honestly, he usually pushes the button too, and still says Hey Siri. But no, I like Hey Siri, and I like that. It only very rarely misfires for me in terms of coming on when I don't want it at all. I don't know. And it hasn't come on at all while I'm talking right now, even though I've said Hey Siri over and over, because I've actually got low battery mode on right now, and that's one of the things that gets turned off.
Well, let me just say this. It happened to me once by accident. I was like, fuck this shit, I'm turning it off. That's it. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah. Making dinner, and it should be
yes.
finished, like, in 2 hours.
Okay. Thank you for telling me. Okay. So one other thing before we get to the election. I watched a movie. I watched Mississippi Burning.
Oh, my God. You had not watched Mississippi Burning before?
Well, you know, just because I watch a movie doesn't mean I haven't watched it before. But yeah, in this case, I had not watched it before. I had not seen Mississippi Burning before.
Jesus, the movie is like, what, 30 years old, maybe?
1988.
25? Yeah, so almost 30 years.
Anyway, I liked it.
It was a good movie.
It was a good movie for those of you who don't know.
Gene Hackman, you know, right?
Gene Hackman, William Dafoe. A couple other people. It's from 1988. It was about, it was loosely based on the murders of three civil rights workers in Mississippi in 1964, but it was highly fictionalized. So, like, if you, you know, apparently when it came out, there was a lot of criticism about, you know, how different it was from what actually happened in real life. But of course, that's what fictionalizations do.
You're getting a phone call? You're getting a phone call.
No, once again, that was an email.
Why do you have such a bump ahead?
We talked about this like last week or the week before.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway.
It's a good movie. I liked it. You know, it's a serious movie. It's not like a lighthearted thing. I mean, we're talking to civil rights movement and lynchings and people getting killed because they were trying to get blacks registered to vote and the Ku Klux Klan controlling the local town's police department and all of this kind of stuff. But it was good. And it also, you know, you look at this, especially from the point of view of however many decades later it is.
Hello, this is Alex, and I'm good to just accord me
Alex.
Playing Minecraft.
Bye, Alex. But it's not comparing to the 80s, but to the 60s, of course. You're looking at this perspective and going, you know, this wasn't that long ago. And
nope.
This kind of behavior was common in a huge part of this country. It's like infuriating watching it now. And honestly, you know, we're going to be talking about the election stuff. It brought to mind like some of the stuff that we're hearing from Trump people and stuff, not because they're overtly like Klan burning things, but
actually some are,
but you know, but at the same time, you hear some of the rhetoric that's being talked about Muslims and foreigners and the Mexicans and blah, blah, blah. And it's at the very least reminiscent. And it's really disturbing, you know, and it's like, because you look at this stuff and you're like, you know, every American should be ashamed of what happened in that era, you know, and you feel like there are people out there who are like, those are the good old days.
Yeah, those are the good old days. Yep.
You know, and
yep. Oh, yeah.
But anyway, it was a good movie. I recommend it if you haven't seen it, for sure. But even if you have seen it, but it's been a while, it's probably worth another watch. It was a good movie. It was nominated for a bunch of Oscars and stuff, I guess at the time. I was about to say fun movie, but it's not a fun movie. But it's a good movie.
It's not a fun movie.
It's a good movie.
No. It's a good movie, but it's not a fun movie.
No, it's not a fun, nice romp. No.
Yay! We're getting out there. It's the chick flick we had. It's so funny. No, not right.
Okay, well, let's take a break, because Alex is wanting my attention again, and his mom is not successfully corralling him. And we'll come back, and we'll talk election stuff for the rest of the show. Back after this.
Mom wants to play Minecraft. And
yes.
Peter, is it possible to do a video while you're doing your podcast? Or is it, or when are you going to be done? Tell me when you're going to be done, or if it's possible to do.
It's not possible to do at the same time I'm doing my podcast. We'll be done in probably about an hour, and then you can record a video with Mommy if you want.
Mommy wants to play.
Okay. I understand.
Bye.
Bye. Moo moo. Okay, hold up.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we are back. So, the presidential election. And someday we'll talk about things like, you know, the Senate and the House and all those things as well. But, you know, those really
who
don't
cares
ramp
about
up
that
until
right
later.
Now anyway. Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, we should care, but they really aren't ramping up yet.
No. There's a difference between we should care and do we care. We don't really care right now.
Yes. Very true.
Right.
So the biggest individual thing I'd say that came up is Trump getting shut out in Colorado.
I'm like, okay, I've read this a couple of times.
Yes.
Walk us through that. Okay. All right. Because you're good at the delegate math.
Yes.
And, I want to understand how that exactly worked. Okay.
Okay. So here's what happened. And this leads right into, you know, the Trump people, you know, acting like little babies about everything. But, look, Colorado is one of the states that when the National Party said that if you have a preference vote in either a primary or a caucus, the delegates have to be bound to that result, Colorado was one of the states that said, fuck that, we don't want that binding, and so we're not going to have a preference vote in our caucus. So what they did is the first caucuses in Colorado at the local level were actually on March 1st. They were on Super Tuesday, but they specifically made sure there was no preference tally at that first vote. It was all people electing delegates to go to the next
level.
That was
just, exactly. That was just a delegate election.
It was a delegate election, and it wasn't like some states are directly electing the actual delegates to the convention. Colorado was not doing that. It's one of these multi-stage processes where they elect the delegates to go to the next place, that elect the delegates to go to the next place kind of thing. But at that first level, there was no preference vote or whatever. It was just simply, okay, from the people in your precinct, who are you going to send to the next level? Period. End
exactly.
of story.
Okay. To the state convention. Okay.
And actually, they had separate little conventions in each of the congressional districts, and then one for the whole state.
Okay.
And so, basically, first of all, Trump didn't really play on March 1st. He sort of, as best I can tell, his organizers, to the extent that he even has them, we're thinking about it in terms of, well, the place where they're going to select the delegates are the congressional district conventions and the state conventions. So what effort they put in at that level. But guess what? The one on March 1st was the one where you elected the people who could actually vote in the later sessions at all.
Right.
And so so one of the problems in like the state convention and the various other congressional district conventions that happened over the last couple of weeks, because this was spread out over several weeks, is that there were Trump voters who showed up wanting to vote. And they're like, well, you're not a delegate. You can't vote.
Right. You can't vote, you idiot.
Were you elected on March 1st? No, you can't come in.
Right.
So that's one thing, is apparently the March 1st thing was basically ignored by Trump. And so back on March 1st, the overwhelming majority of people who showed up were like Cruz guys and maybe a few others. But the way these multi-stage processes work, if you've got, let's say you have 75% of the delegates on the first round, you're in an overwhelmingly strong position in the second round because of the way these things work.
Yeah, I would think.
And so, because, you know, out of the people who are authorized to vote, you've already got 75%. And then you've got, on top of that, a method of voting for delegates that is going to bias towards the winner. So then we get to the individual conventions. And again, for the most part, Trump wasn't paying attention. But when they were, like, so over the course of 3 weeks, or 2 weeks, or whenever it was, each of the congressional districts had their own conferences, and one by one, Cruz was picking them off. Three delegates here, three delegates there, because he was winning all of them. At the state convention, though, I think what happened there is prototypical for what happened at all the congressional districts as well, which is basically Cruz came completely organized. So if you were a Cruz supporter, you heard from the Cruz campaign before you came. They called you to remind you to go. They had prepared in advance, this is the slate of delegates we want everybody to vote for. Please vote for these guys in this order. And so they're highly organized.
Cruz came prepared to the game.
Cruz actually came in person to the state convention and gave a long speech. And while he was talking, projected on the screen behind him was his slate of delegates. Trump didn't go. And when Trump's people did prepare slates of delegates, they screwed up a lot. So there were lots and lots of reports of things like, so first of all, the actual ballot you had, and I would be really annoyed by this, it's sort of a cluster anyway, but like the ballot was just a Scantron with a whole bunch of numbers on it. So you would vote for delegate 235, and you'd have to have a separate cheat sheet to tell you that 235 was somebody that you wanted to deal with. You know, but like the things that Trump would put out, for instance, would have a list of delegates, and some of the ones on the list weren't even Trump supporters. You know,
but
they got the number.
But that's idiotic. dramatic on his behalf. I mean, wait, this is not like they went and they scribbled down, they selected the wrong number in the Scantron. This is his people giving his guys the wrong people to vote for.
Yes,
right?
In some cases, or putting numbers on the cheat sheet that didn't actually exist on the ballot, or putting the same number twice, or things like
that. Come on, that's moronic. I mean, that just shows his complete disregard for the process or organization, period.
Right, and there were a couple errors on the ballot itself. Like there was apparently one number left off that was a Trump supporter. Some other number was listed twice. So there were errors on the actual ballot itself. But Trump's people basically came completely disorganized. They weren't, you know, in some cases they weren't even distributing slates. When they did distribute slates, they were full of errors. And so you got the situation where basically all the Cruz people that got here who were, you know, outnumbered the Trump people significantly anyway, because the Trump people didn't do well back on March 1st, you know, were all in lockstep, voted for everybody on their slate. And this is, by the way, the kind of voting, like it's the same in the congressional district and statewide, but it was sort of like, you know, you get this sheet with like 100 people on it and you get to vote for 12. And the 12 with the most votes end up being the delegates, right? Something along those lines. And so the Cruz people would all vote for the 12 that they were supposed to vote for. The Trump people would vote for all kinds of random people all over the place. And guess what? That means they lost. And so they were shut out in each of the congressional districts, and they were shut out at the state level. And so they got nothing. Cruz got 34 delegates. Trump got zero. And that, by the way, like, if you actually did, you know, if Colorado did have a primary or caucus, Trump would do better than 0%. Cruz might still win, but he would do better than 0%.
I think.
Now, by the way, I should add one more thing. Apparently, at least in a bunch of the precinct caucuses on the first, there were some where Trump had more people show up to the caucus, but because of this disorganization, they lost the delegate slots anyway.
Gee, retarded.
And now, meanwhile, the Trump people now are complaining that, you know, this is Cruz cheating. And
no, this is not Cruz cheating. This is Cruz got the rule book and said, okay, this is what needs to be done. Perfect. We're going to do what the rule book says. That's it. I mean, you know, Trump wants to get, like, you know, elected just because he's just louder. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but it's like somebody was saying today, this is a party nominating process. It's not exactly democratic. It follows a certain set of rules and procedures, which is why most people running for president had an organization and people to understand those rules and help you navigate through that process. Trump elected not to have that. It's just elected on this method. Well, that's great, and it's gotten them a whole bunch. But shit, it's left them quite deficient in certain places. And shit like this happens. And so now he's like worried that, well, I'm not going to get enough delegates. Well, you know what? If you had taken this, if you would have been really serious about this damn thing from the beginning, which I still challenge that maybe he wasn't,
right.
Okay? I do think that he was just, you know, he thought that this, that, you know, whatever, he'd get a lot of publicity and then he would be done or whatever, and all of a sudden he's the front runner now. Like, this thing kind of just snowballed on him. If he'd have been really serious, then he would have been really organized.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, a bunch of these come, all of these problems, and we've talked about these in other states too, and it's getting worse in other states too, on the behind the scenes, getting the people who are, you know, are pledged for Trump actually being somebody else, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But this one was actually electing the delegates itself, and it all comes down to nobody on the Trump side bothered to even figure out what the hell the rules were in advance and do something about it.
Right.
You know, and it's just assuming that, you know, your people are going to come out. And, I mean, it goes all the way back to Iowa, where, you know, Trump's perfect quote on, I didn't even know ground game was a thing. And
right.
You know, and apparently he didn't learn from that and start, because if after Iowa he'd said, okay, we have to take this shit seriously and start figuring out, you know, what are all the rules in all of the states, and let's get experts on the ground and let's start figuring this out and let's get organized and let's make sure people come out and blah, 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 especially in these like caucus places where, you know, in order to win a caucus, you have to get your guys out. You have to get them there. They have to know what they're doing. They have to, you have to, and none of that. None of that whatsoever.
But the big thing, but in part, that comes back to the fact that he talks about self-funding the campaign. But he is self-funding the campaign, but he's not really putting a lot of money into it.
Right.
Okay? That's the big problem.
And he apparently, for the first time, hired somebody who's actually an expert at this delegate stuff about a week and a half ago.
I mean, a week and a half ago, we're in the middle of fucking April. You hired somebody now?
Yeah.
That's way late.
You know, and so that guy's been doing some interviews and talking about how they're blah, 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 blah. But, like, you know, it's like, you just, there was no reason to lose Colorado 34-0.
Right.
You know, you should have at least been able to get some of those damn delegates. You know, I'm not even saying that he should have won.
This is the only instance where he's lost delegates through this process. I think we talked about there was a number of states, I think it was Louisiana, Mississippi, and a number of other states where he's lost delegates because of the same problems.
Well, and again, some of those are different because he's also been losing in this process of, as my son's yelling in the background, I don't know about what, but the process of actually choosing the human beings, even if they're bound, he's been getting crushed at this too, primarily by Sanders, Cruz. different candidate, a whole other set of issues there, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. So in Louisiana, what happened is he actually hasn't lost any delegates in terms of who is bound to him. But what he has lost is there are several of the delegates who are bound to Trump on the first ballot are actually Cruz supporters, and several of the delegates who were uncommitted are Cruz supporters, and several of the delegates that are bound to Rubio on the first ballot are actually Cruz supporters. So what happens is, you know, if everything, assuming they even get to a normal first ballot and there are no rules changes or anything like that, Trump gets his delegates on the first shot. But once we have a second ballot, guess what? They all support Cruz. And that's been happening in state after state after state.
I know.
We've been talking about, like, I think we talked last week about how if Trump doesn't get it on the first ballot, he may not have a shot because I'm thinking more and more, like, maybe Cruz does it on the second ballot because, you know, all I'm hearing, and maybe the technical difficulties. Who, regardless of who they are pledged to, actually support Cruz. And so, you know, what do you get? So we have a scenario where, you know, people are calling him stealth delegates or ghost delegates or whatever, where you might actually get to the convention and have a majority of people who actually support Cruz, but aren't allowed to vote for him on the first ballot, but they will on a second. And there's even been some talk that if you have that situation, the Cruz folks could say, even if Trump was right up against that limit, if he had enough people, he could say, let's do a change of the rules. Everybody knows nobody has a majority on the first ballot. Let's just skip the first ballot, unbind everybody right now, and just go straight to it. You know, and which could throw things into very crazy directions. You also have the scenario, I mean, we talked about the uncommitteds potentially being decisive, depending on how this turns out. But we've also got all of these Rubio and Kasich delegates.
Right.
They could end up being in the position of, you know, now the Rubio delegates may not all be Rubio supporters either. We just talked about how in Louisiana, the Rubio delegates are really Cruz guys. But you could end up with a scenario where, you know, Rubio ends up as a kingmaker, getting to pick, you know, ask his delegates, who, of course, could do whatever the hell they want. But maybe if some of them are actually Rubio guys, maybe they would respect what Rubio said. If Rubio said, hey, please, everybody, go vote for this person on the second ballot or whatever.
Vote for Ivan.
Or Kasich, you know. He's also in that similar position.
What I'm seeing from this entire thing, it's just, it's amazing, you know, in summary, it's amazing to me the lack of, like, structure that Trump has. But at the same time, I mean, Cruz's organization, I don't like Cruz, but Jesus, he's sure as hell.
He's on this
got
stuff.
His fucking, yes, he is. He's got his ducks in a row in a way, I mean, in a way better than everybody else, period. Way better than everybody else. I mean, it's impressive to see how he's got them organized.
No, I think that's true. I mean, Cruz has been showing that, you know, he put together a staff who knows what they're doing on this stuff, and he's running rings around Trump. Now, the question, you know, will he end up with, like I said, will he have enough so that, assuming the first ballot is nobody has over a majority, with the pledge, you know, all of the bound delegates, does he have enough that on the second ballot, boom, he wins and we have candidate and he gets the nomination?
I don't know if that's situation? The case, but at least it makes him the kingmaker to basically gets to decide who the hell gets it.
Well, because do we have a situation where the first ballot Trump's ahead and there's no majority, the second ballot Cruz is ahead but there's no majority, and we end up going to third, fourth, fifth, sixth ballots? There's also talk of, adjusting the rules so that even if it goes multiple ballots, nobody that didn't run could jump in.
Right.
But, you know, that's the kind of thing where even if you make that rule, if you get to the 100th ballot and you still don't have anybody, you're going to be changing the rules again. You know.
Well, Paul Ryan today, like, called himself out of this whole thing again.
Again. Yes. So Paul Ryan has, who people have been talking about as one of the potential saviors that could come in and potentially be the candidate if there was no majority and it was deadlocked and blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, please leave me alone. I'm not doing that. You know, he's like, I made the decision when I agreed to be Speaker of the House. You know, I'd already made the decision that I wasn't running for president. And, you know, and frankly, he's having a hard enough time in the House. You know, all the stuff we've been talking about before, about the division between the Tea Party and the leadership in the House, that's still going on. And he's trying to put together a budget right now, and the Tea Party side of the party isn't having anything to do with it. So I
actually believe him, that he's not really, you know. I mean, it sounds sexy, but I actually believe him. So I think even though a lot of people would want him to be there, but I do believe that he's being sincere on that.
Well, and the thing with all of that is, even if you believe he's sincere, you can still come up with a scenario. I mean, if let's imagine we are on the 10th ballot. We've run out of days of the Republican convention.
Right, that's a different story.
They're
right.
Trying to figure out, you know, where to go to have day six because they no longer have the space rented that they had. you know, and they're still voting and they're getting nowhere and everybody's mad and they're like, you know, their fisticuffs have broken out on the floor a couple times. And, you know, with every day this goes on, the whole party looks worse. And somebody comes to him and says, please, you're our only hope. You know?
No, I get that.
Do you
that's
say
a, that's
no?
A different scenario. No, it's a different scenario, of course. Well, of course, you know, you get these guys, like, for example, the juicy quote over here from Anonymous, I'm not going to mention, who says that the people are being undermined by the GOP, the government over people, quote. So you've got those people that are commenting on your analysis.
Yeah, I take it you're not moving anymore in your car.
I am not.
Because while we were talking there, you commented on my website and you're reading quotes from it. So
yes, I am not. I am not driving and reading.
No, okay. This is exactly the whole cheating thing. It's like, you know, like
no big deal. The crooks in the Colorado Republican Party that they're part to stop Trump. Your lousy little 34 votes mean nothing. Trump will make up that and more in New York alone. Trump is winning. So keep dreaming.
Right.
There you go.
So, so the thing is with these, and that one actually has a point that I made in my post about the Colorado results as well, in that, you know, Trump's in his worst position he's been in so far, but he's still not out. He still could get an outright majority before we get to the convention.
I know. It's possible. It's got a good possibility still. Yep.
And like I mentioned that Sam Wang at Princeton Election Consortium, I believe is what it's called, did a number of simulations based on current polling and the delegate rules in all of the remaining states. And he actually comes up with about 60% chance that Trump still wins this outright. Now, I read some of his assumptions, and I think he made some overly aggressive assumptions on how some of the uncommitted delegates would go. So my personal estimate is Trump has maybe a 40% chance of winning outright, but 40% is nothing to sneeze at. At the same time, a 60% chance of a contested convention is the best we've had in our lifetimes. So, you know, we're definitely, you know, salivating about this contested convention scenario because it would be the most interesting here. Trump could still win this outright. And we absolutely, one of the things that's frustrating about this, and this applies to, you know, the Sanders folks getting all excited about the string of states they've won as well, is that unless you see fundamentals in the other states changing, people have done analysis on previous elections. Momentum is bullshit. You know, for the most part, momentum, and I'm doing air quotes here, is simply a result of the calendar. And with the exception of people dropping out in the first few states when they get nothing, for the rest of that, momentum is just an illusion caused by the calendar and which states happen to be voting in what order. So, yeah, right now, Trump has had a string of really bad states for him. But for the most part, he's done about what people expected him to do. He did badly in states that people expected him to do badly. Now, the Colorado thing is political malpractice. He should have gotten some delegates there. He shouldn't have gotten shut out. But for the most part, he's done about what people expected him to based on how he'd done in previous states and his demographics and all that kind of stuff. And guess what? We're now coming up on a whole bunch of states where he's expected to do really, really well. And so I've seen somebody Twitter, I don't know what it was, he's like, you're doing a countdown, 9 days until everybody's talking about the massive Trump comeback. 8 days until everybody's talking about the massive Trump comeback.
And he's right, because that's the way the that everybody like following this race keeps covering it. I mean, every time that Sanders wins or Cruz wins, it's like, oh my God, they've got the momentum. They're taking over. They're going to win. No, look, I mean, like we said, look, it's still highly likely that Trump gets the majority. What we've talked about is that he's made the likelihood of him getting it made far more tenuous for reasons that just are lack of organization.
Yes.
And understanding of the process.
And that's what I was going to say. I'm down to 40% of him winning it outright. And I think like when we were talking about it a couple months ago, I predicted like 70% he would win it outright or something like that. And I think we're down to 40 now. And the reason is not because his support has somehow diminished because people are less excited about him than they were or something.
No.
It's because he has shown that he will let delegates go for no reason just because he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
That's right.
And we're in a race where basically in order to get to his magic number, you know, he has to do things perfectly. And Colorado is showing he's not.
No, he's not. And that's the reason why, like you said, even my confidence, look, I will say that a month ago, I thought it was a lock for sure. I was going to say 70 and same as you said, Jesus, you know, look, 75%. Nope. You know, no sweat. But every time that one of these fuck ups happen, you're like, well, shit, he's not gaining more. You know, I thought maybe he would gain more support. Okay. Like from the people. But the reality is the support he's gotten is the support he's gotten. I haven't really seen him solidify support. So that's like reduced it. And then he keeps fucking up shit like this.
Although I will say, if you do look at the national poll averages, there was a big freak out like a few days ago where everybody was like, oh, Donald Trump is finally starting to go down in the polls. But if you look at like pollster.com and their default smoothing or whatever, actually, he's been on a general upward trend this whole time. He had a little bit of a down dip for a couple days, but it's heading back up again. He's now, if you look at, and I'm looking at Pollster, not RCP right now, but if you look at Pollster, he's actually at 44.3% right now in the national polls, and national polls don't matter. We all know that, but that's the highest he's been so far.
Okay.
You know,
but how much higher is that from what it was a month ago?
Oh, it's, let's see, a month ago, April 10th. A month ago, it was at 41.7. Now it's at 44.3.
But you see, my point is that that's within the margin of error of that, 41 to 44. I mean, I would have been thinking that a month later, after he had done so well in so many places, it would be to 60%. Okay? He's taken it. It's done. All right? That move is margin of error. I mean,
well, margin of error is weird with poll averages, but I get your point.
But,
yes,
but it's just a couple of points. It's not like all of a sudden everybody coalesced around this guy and we're going. It didn't happen.
Right. Well, and the whole thing is like if we had the Democrat rules right now, where every state was proportional, We'd 100% be at, we've got a contested convention.
Oh, yeah, folks. It's a contested convention 100%. There's no way he would, absolutely. If it was under Democratic rules, there is absolutely no freaking way he'd be getting it. He would be like, right now, forget it. Nobody's getting the nomination in the Republican Party, period.
The only reason we're not saying that yet is because we've got winner-take-all states, we've got winner-take-most states, we've got these states that do it by congressional district, we've got all of this stuff going on. Oh, and by the way, I should say, to be clear, this is actually kind of interesting. I just opened up the Real Clear Politics average, and while he's up on Pollster, he's actually down a bit on Real Clear Politics right now.
What I'm saying?
He's still up from a month ago, though. He's still up from a month ago. But
by how much?
36 to 39, so 3 points from
three
a month.
3 points. I mean, and that's what I'm saying.
On Real Clear Politics, he's still on a downward trend, whereas on Pollster, he was on a downward trend and then is back up again. But
my point is that 36 to 39 from a guy who supposedly was the convincing winner of Super Tuesday and blah 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 and all those things. I mean, shit. I mean, I'm pretty sure that if you go back to like previous guys that went and got a convincing win in March.
Oh, I've posted a couple comparisons. I haven't done another one in a couple weeks now, but I've done a couple comparisons of this year versus 2012 and 2008 on the Republican side. Those guys had it locked up by now. McCain,
right.
McCain and Romney were all locked up by now. There was no question, but we are not there with Trump. And like I said, Trump's in his worst position yet. Right now, he needs 57% and change of the remaining
delegates. And that number
delegates.
Has been going up every, you know, we kept talking about making that number go down, and that number keeps going up.
Well, it went down and down and down until this last string of losses for Trump, and then it went up in this last string of losses. But the thing is, it's about to go down again as he wins New York and Connecticut and,
Now, I know that the rules favor, you know, whoever the front runner is, okay? But, man, it's still 57% of the damn frickin' delegates.
Right. Well,
the remaining delegates to win.
And that's why we're saying if it was Democratic rules, we'd be done. Although we would still have people hanging on, as Sanders proves. But we don't have Democratic rules. We've got all of these states that have weird things happening. And I pointed out in my last post about this, which was on April 10th, I posted one titled "Trump's Losing Streak Continues: Is a Contested Convention Inevitable?" And I go through this in a lot of detail, but I also point to, excuse me, I mentioned the Sam Wang analysis. But Nate Cohn also did an analysis at the New York Times. Both of those are good. But also, there's two sites that allow you to do simulators. The Upshot and 538 have delegate simulators where you can move some sliders around to sort of try to get scenarios where Trump will win or will not win or whatever. And you can start with the default, which is sort of the expert consensus or whatever, which has Trump coming up just a little bit short, most likely. But it does not take very much to put it in the win column for Trump. And even in like the New York Times one, the Upshot one, even if you take their default settings, it's still looks like you got about a 50% chance of Trump making it there.
So we're talking 40, 50, 60% range. So yeah, I mean, it's just, it's just not locked up. Like we said, he's got the inside track on this.
Yeah.
It's just that if he keeps fucking up shit like this, well, damn, he's not going to get it.
Right. And then when we talk the convention itself, like I said, I have to give, like right now, I have to give Cruz the big advantage. Like if we get to round two,
I mean, it's really Cruz's game. I mean, he's really,
Now, and I don't know if he has it locked up. Like he can win it straight. Like people are starting to try to do counts, whip counts as they call them, of all of the delegates and what their real preferences are. But not all of these delegates have even been assigned yet. So it's still it's still premature to do that, but people are starting to try to do it. I've got a wiki page where I'm now tracking some of the uncommitted delegates using a couple of sources. But most of these guys, unlike the Democrats, where the Democratic superdelegates are all fairly well known officials, the Republican delegates here, some of them are. But some of them are the county clerk in some county that got himself elected to be delegate. Nobody knows, who that is and what their preferences are. But you can be damn sure that over the course of the next month or so, I don't know what the Trump campaign is going to be doing, but the Cruz campaign is going to be trying to talk to every single one of those fucking delegates.
Yes.
And understand. Okay, are you for Cruz? If you're not for Cruz, if he called you personally and asked you, would that help?
Right.
This is going to be I don't know. So we got probably, like you said, depending on who you ask, between a 40-60% chance, or between a 40-70% chance, actually, of Trump winning outright. If he doesn't win outright, we probably have to give an 80% chance that Cruz just takes it. But then we have that other bit and maybe 70%. I haven't worked out all these numbers yet, but like, it could be Cruz, but we still have, you know, Trump maybe could still pull it out in a contested convention, although it seems unlikely. And then we've got these, you know, maybe it ends up being Kasich or Rubio, or maybe it is Ryan or something, even despite his protestations, or Romney or whoever. McCain was not talking about him running, but McCain came out after Ryan said that he was out. McCain was quoted, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but it basically said, okay, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do now, because he hates both Trump and Cruz.
I know.
I don't quite feel sorry for him, but
neither do I, but you know, hey, he's part of the whole group that created this mess.
And the thing is, a lot of people are going to be in that position. You know, so, I don't know. So, okay, let's take a quick break and then just wrap up a few random thoughts, and we'll touch on the Democrats for a few seconds, and then we'll wrap the sucker up. Back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, we're back. So the one theme, we talked about Trump and his supporters being all like, it's cheating, it's blah, 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 and we're, you know, and they're really vehement about this kind of thing. And I think that you are going to get into a position where,
Including Trump himself, Trump's quote was something about that the system is rigged, something along those lines.
Yeah. He's been complaining about that kind of stuff. The other one though, like, Reince Priebus, who's the chairman of the RNC, he tweeted, I guess it was about a day ago now, nomination process known for a year and beyond. It's the responsibility of the campaigns to understand it. Complaints now, give us all a break.
I wonder
who he could be talking about. But there's no question you're going to have lots and lots of upset people.
Okay, so the quote was, Donald Trump says, system is stacked against me. Accuse Republican Party of conspiring to stop him from clinching nomination. Yes. There you go.
But what you're going to get is you're going to get all of these people who are convinced that it's a massive conspiracy and they're being cheated. They're not going to be happy.
You know what the worst thing is? These assholes, it's the system is actually stacked to help a guy like Trump win. And he's not winning.
Yes. Now, and
which is what I find most galling about the complaints. Okay.
And look, let's pivot to the Democrats for a second. You got the same things you're hearing from the Sanders people about. About the superdelegates and caucuses.
Let's be clear. Hillary has an edge in the straight up delegate count. Outside of the superdelegates, okay? So that whining is bullshit.
Well, here's the latest thing from the Sanders campaign. They have vowed to quote-unquote contest the convention even if Sanders is behind in the total delegate count, behind in the pledged delegate count, behind in the popular vote, in any scenario where Clinton doesn't have an outright majority just in pledged delegates, and maybe even then. They've basically said they're going to take it to the convention no matter what. They're going to be contesting things on rules. They're going to be...
Whatever. They can go suck it. Whatever. They're not going to get anywhere. Whatever. I mean, I'm just like, I'm so over it. I'm just like, you know, I mean, I'm sorry.
Because
wait a minute. They don't have...
It's actually easy to see this scenario, a situation where neither Clinton or Sanders are over the magic number if you don't count superdelegates.
That's not the way it fucking works!
Right. Yes, exactly. And the Sanders folks are now calling that an open convention. No, that's not
what it means. They can go suck it! That's not what it means!
Right. Because superdelegates are delegates. Sorry.
You know, I'm like...
And also, another thing I should point out is there has been an increasing effort on the part of Sanders' supporters. It's unclear exactly how much of this is coming from the campaign and how much is sort of self-organized on the supporter side of trying to convince Clinton delegates to change their minds or trying to convince Clinton delegates that they should follow what their states do. And from all reports, this is backfiring amazingly.
I figured that they were just...
Because there are two things here. One, the biggest argument seems to be, I'm sorry, you're a superdelegate. You shouldn't vote your conscience. You shouldn't vote the way you think is right. You should vote the way your state did, no matter what. And that's basically telling... You're trying to make the argument to superdelegates that their opinions don't matter.
That the reason that they exist shouldn't, because they exist specifically for a scenario similar to this, that they should not care that this is why they exist.
Well, even that, but like these superdelegates are there because they have certain positions. They're in the Democratic National Committee. They're a governor. They're a senator. They're a representative. They've been a significant party leader in the past. Every single one of those feels like they have earned that position.
The right to vote the way, to steer the party the way that they believe it should be steered.
Right. So number one is you're not going to convince these people by telling them they should put their own opinion to the side and they should vote for some other reason. If you really want to convince these people, you have to make the argument on the merits and try to convince them that Sanders really is better than Clinton or whatever. But apparently that's not the approach that people have been taking for the most part. It's just like superdelegates suck. As a superdelegate, you should do this because it's the right thing to do, regardless of your own position. And that's just not working here. But on top of that, apparently the tone that's been taken is these guys are getting harassed. Like, these superdelegates are getting harassed on all platforms, on social media, in person, whatever, by Sanders people, you know, telling them how bad they are for supporting Clinton and telling them how, you know, Clinton is evil.
That's really winning them over.
The latest was somebody put out, some Sanders supporter put out like a Google Doc spreadsheet or whatever. With personal contact information for these guys, as much as he could find, and called it the superdelegate hit list. That's really going to make people.
That's really going to go over very well.
Exactly, you know, and he meant hit bit list metaphorically. It wasn't actually like, you know, now the list of superdelegates is public now. I one of my main sources for election graphs is there's a Wikipedia page on the list of superdelegates that's, you know, it has a whole bunch of volunteers updating it on a daily basis, being very meticulous about sourcing and all this other kind of stuff, which is awesome. But over the last, there are two interesting edit battles that have happened here. But the most recent one relevant to the conversation we have just talked about is that several times over the last 24 hours, people have come in and just deleted the whole list saying, you know, this is private information. No, the list of superdelegates is not private information. Now, if you post their personal cell phone numbers, okay, that is. But
yeah.
Who is a superdelegate and who they support is not private information. It's public information. It's out there. It's, you know, It's all public.
Oh, yeah.
Source.
I mean, that's always been public. I mean, I've actually met superdelegates before. I went to an event, I think it was in 92, where I was with Mayor of New York, David Dinkins, and a whole bunch of other, like, Clinton campaign people. And I met a whole bunch of these superdelegates. I mean, they're real people. I mean, I don't know. It's,
right, exactly. And so these have gone back and forth. The other one, by, and so this was, I believe it's Clinton people removing the list because people are harassing them. Which, okay, I'm sorry.
I guess I understand why, but unfortunately, I mean, it's a public list. That is what it is.
Yeah, right. But the other edit war, which I'm pretty sure is from Sanders people, is Bill Clinton, about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, made some comments that basically said, you know, hey, you know, just like in 2008, you know, I ended up voting and my superdelegate vote went for Obama, you know, because we unified the party behind the winner, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, if we were in a similar position, you know, I would support Sanders. And so Sanders folks have taken that to be, you know, Clinton, Bill Clinton is not for Hillary Clinton. And so should not be listed as a Hillary Clinton delegate. And so I've been switching that back and forth all the time because they'll switch him to uncommitted and then somebody will come on and say, come on, really? Let's be real here. Let's interpret this properly.
Yeah, Bill's not going to vote for Hillary. Really, idiots? Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, funny stuff. But the thing that's common, and I just want to make this commonality between both the Trump people and the Sanders people, is this massive feeling of denial you get when you try to sort of look at the cold hard facts here. Like in the case of the Trump folks, it's denying that there's even any possibility whatsoever of a contested convention, or if there is, it's somehow stolen from it.
It's all rigged. All stolen.
But also, you get a lot of those comments on the general election when their polls showing that Clinton's beating Trump. They're like, this is all bullshit. This is, you know, I don't trust polls. This is not real. Trump's going to win, you know, 50 states. And meanwhile, on the Sanders side, it's these increasingly outrageous scenarios leading to a win, you know, where even the Sanders folks at this point are talking about scenarios where they don't win all the pledged delegates and then they're trying to change rules at the convention or suddenly all the superdelegates are going to go for them. And it's like, at what point do you face reality? You know, you can still be in this to get your platform across or whatever, but you're not winning. The only way you win right now is if Clinton gets hit by a truck, either a real one or metaphorically, you know?
Yep.
Anyway, we've said that before. That hasn't changed. But, you know, the passion you see from
because
both,
she's not getting indicted. Okay, let's be clear. It's not going to happen.
But if she does, okay, possible game changer, depending on what the indictment is and what the details are.
But like I said, she's not getting indicted. It's not going to happen.
Right. But the point I was just making is that you've got the Trump folks and the Sanders folks have a very similar type of passion and a very similar sort of, you get the feeling that a lot of them don't, well, they kind of resent the fact they're so anti-system that anything that causes their candidate to lose is inherently unfair or a trick.
It's a fraud.
Right. It's not just, hey, your candidate didn't do as well as the other guy in playing the game that was put in front of them. It's that it's cheating in some way, or it's unfair. It's this, it's that. And in both cases, it's like, hey, you guys, you know, the rules have been out there for a while. There's nothing crazy here. There's nothing that's, I mean, there is craziness. I mean, some of these rules make no fucking sense, but they were out there.
But like, they were published rules. Like, these were not hidden rules. That's my point.
Yeah, like,
I mean, you know,
like on the Sanders side, on Sanders Clinton spent the entire time since she left being the Secretary of State building the groundwork for her campaign, including getting the support of all these fucking superdelegates.
Superdelegates.
So before the first votes ever came out in Iowa, she already had hundreds and hundreds of these lined up.
Right.
You know, let's see, what's the...
No, you're not exaggerating the number. She had hundreds of them lined up.
Yeah. It was about 500 and change before we even got to Iowa.
And Bernie basically was like, I don't give a fuck about superdelegates, because I guess maybe he thought he had no snowball's chance of even making it close.
Right. Well, got a which lot also probably applies to Trump. Actually, the before Iowa, Clinton had 427. Sanders had 23.
That's a pretty nice chunk.
You know, and so, yeah. I mean, she had essentially an 8% head start before the voting even started. Now, could Sanders have been doing the same thing for the previous 4 years? He could have. Now, he would have had some disadvantages even then because he wasn't actually a Democrat and this and that and all kinds of things.
Well, that's my point. But, that's why he's not winning.
But anyway, and on the Republican side, you know, Trump had plenty of time to learn how delegates work.
Trump had plenty of time to hire a real campaign. Trump had plenty of time to learn how delegates work. Trump had plenty of time to read the rules. He had plenty of time for any of this thing, and he didn't do jack shit of it because, like we said, I don't think he was serious in this whole fucking thing in the first place.
Yeah, he most likely was not until he got into it, and he's like, oh, holy shit, I'm winning.
Right.
But by then, you know, we're already well into it. And so we're now at this scenario. Like, if he had properly done these things, if he just done a little bit towards being a regular candidate. I mean, I'm not talking about throwing away his whole shtick or anything like that.
No, just hire a campaign manager, hiring people to understand organizing, voter turnout operations, that kind of shit.
Yeah, just that.
You know,
if he'd done that kind of stuff, we wouldn't be talking about the potential of a contested convention. We'd be talking about him as the presumptive nominee.
Absolutely. We're talking about what we talked about, ground game. That's what we're talking about. We said, ground game, what's that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we're done.
I think we're done. We're out.
So before the next episode, is New York yet? Or we still have to wait a whole fucking other week?
No, we still have to wait.
Now the other thing that is coming up,
Hold on. Today is what?
The 14th. It is.
It's the 13th.
Well, 14th UTC.
No, well, is it 14th UTC? Yes, it is. Okay. So wait. Isn't New York the 18th?
Yeah, I think it's so. So it is before next time.
It may well be.
And I've also got the second round of the Democratic caucuses here in Washington State that I'm in will also be this weekend. So, yeah, it's Tuesday the 19th is New York. So yeah,
Tuesday the 19th. So, now, so yeah, we'll have that.
We will have New there York. Yay, this is our slogan.
Yay! We don't have to keep talking on and on. With no numbers.
Yes. So we will have more news by next time around and presumably other stuff going along too. We are done.
I, by the way, I did do the election graphs post of the fucking lying assholes. We'll see what that.
Yes, I saw that. No responses yet. But
okay, yeah. All right, we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll monitor the situation.
Yeah, you made that post on the one about the Republican losing streak. So anyway, thank you everybody for joining us once again. This has been another Curmudgeon's Corner, and you made it to the end. We appreciate it when you go and like us on Facebook. Like the election graphs one too, and you can see all the comments that Yvonne's been talking about, and add to them yourself. It's honestly on election graphs on both the updates about the Republicans and the general election updates, it's overwhelmingly Trump people in the comments. It'd be nice to see somebody who's not a Trump person in the comments occasionally.
Or listen, it's okay if you're not a Trump person or making pro-Trump comments. They're really hilarious.
Honestly, even if you are a Trump person, if you're the kind of Trump person who actually listens to our show and is thoughtful about why you support Donald Trump, it would actually be very interesting to hear from you, because most of the people who are Trump supporters on here don't fit into that category. They're just
right. Oh, we're gonna get Trump.
And but you know, if you've got that kind of comment, put it on the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page as opposed to Election Graphs. Or, yeah, well, put it whatever the fuck you want. But it would be great to hear from you. But like Curmudgeon's Corner, like Election Graphs, and comment on either one whenever you see something interesting. Tell us what you think about this episode on the Curmudgeon's Corner side. We'd love to hear from you, and we respond to a lot of the comments we get. Not everyone. I'll be honest, we've missed a few lately. We've had comments that we have not responded to. For instance, I'll just mention our listener Edward last time around commented on Tesla. He suspects that Tesla's biggest product in the future will be the batteries rather than the cars. Thank you for the comment there. We've had a few others, but sometimes we do comment right back to you on these things. So we always appreciate it. Anyway, that's it. Tell your friends to listen and have a great week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.